Jerry Farmer, Reel 2.
Right. My father said, a bullet has got your name on it. He said, it's no good of dodging side to side. So my advice to you in the army, never volunteer for anything. Go in a straight line. Do what you're told to do. And if you get it, you get it. And if you survive, you survive. It's as easy as that.
Do you know the date that you were called out?
Oh, I should never forget that. I had my medical in the November of 51. In September 51, I was 18. I had an announcement on the radio that said all boys born between a certain period, 33 May to so, please register. So I went up to the local employment agency, I registered. Incidentally, I met lots of my old school friends that were registering at the same time because I caught the 15 age group leaving by 1 week. Everybody returned to school on the 9th of September in those days, or the 7th, after the summer holidays. The new law in 47 came, or 48, came out in 48. A law said you must stay on to 15. You should not leave at 14. Because I had to start school on the 9th of September, and I wasn't 15 until the 15th, for 1 week I had to do another year at school. Oh, yeah. So all my generation, who I went in the army, we've all left at 15. And the next time I saw them, there was a dozen signing on, registering. Right, that was in the sometime September. I had my medical at Wanstead in November, around about Armistice Day, so I remember it was very foggy and I couldn't find the place. And I got my papers on the, something like December the 2nd. I went on the 5th of the December, I went to the Hackney Empire and saw the Ted Heath band with all the famous people in it, Lita Rosa and Dickie Valentine and all these famous people. And the very next morning, I had to report at 10 o'clock on the 6th of December 1951 to the Tower of London.
Did you feel resentful about being called up?
No, it was just something that you knew that's what you had to do. I didn't want to go, not because I didn't fancy, I was against the law or saying the law was wrong, but I was not going to be a soldier. No way was I a soldier person. I've never really, and you're not going to believe this, and people don't believe it, ever had a fight in a school playground. I never, ever had a fight with anybody, ever, even now. And I'm 65 this September. Right, so there's no way I was going to be a soldier and be aggressive. I put down for the RAF, which I fancied because I liked working aeroplanes and things, you know, young people were like, and I thought, you know, I could be a grand staff, and I'd enjoy it on an airfield. And I did the test. Nobody said whether I failed or not, but they put me in the infantry, and I believe that came about for one specific reason. They said to me at the induction place, they said, what do you want to go in? You won't get in the RAF. You can't go in the Navy because you have to sign on 3 years for the Navy. So I suppose I failed the test for the Air Force because I was no good at maths. I couldn't do sums quickly. So I said, well, I'll go in the Army. And they said, any preference? I said, could I go in the artillery? And they said, why do you want that? Got family in it? I said, no. They said, what was your father in? I said, he was in the Wiltshire Regiment during the war. And they said, why would you like the artillery? What do you think? I said, so gullible. I said, because they don't do a lot of marching about. Right? And I went into the infantry, who do a lot of marching about. And from that day to this, I believe that's why I got into the infantry. Because I said, I don't want to march about. And that was the old way of life in those days, is people thought, right, you'll do marching about. That's what you don't want to do. And that was the general way people thought. Yeah?
And was that genuinely how you felt, that you didn't want to march about?
I didn't know that then, but I know it now. With age, I know now that if you sit in front of an officer and say, I want to do that because, you know, if I'd have said I like guns and I like firing, I'm interested in equipment, I'd have gotten the artillery. But once I didn't want to march, they said, well, this boy's going to march. And that's what the army was like in those days. They made sure you did. If you went sick with a headache and you said, I feel a bit depressed, sir, which is unusual for those days, he'd say, oh, great, I've got the very thing. Give him an extra hour on the swear. arch about, and get that depression lifted. Yeah? So that was it.
Where did you do the basic training?
Tower of London. I went into the Tower of London. We did 6 weeks basic before we could come home. But where I was lucky, because it was, I went in December the 6th, when it came to Christmas, they said if we could salute an officer properly, which they trained us for a whole day marching up and down saluting a wooden post, we could go home for Christmas. So we went home for Christmas, which was unusual because you could not go out because of your inoculations. You had TAB, you had CHIP test, which was in, I didn't know what they did, but you hold your two arms out in front, and they put this needle up here somewhere. It was called CHIP, after Dr. CHIP, CHIP test. And that was really hurt, that didn't. What surprised me the most, that because I was kind of an insignificant type of non-fighter, non-aggressive, wouldn't say boot or goose, I thought, I know what's going to happen. When the needles come out, I'm going to faint, you know? But I never ever did. And I was with, would you believe, a chap that told me he worked with his dad in the circus, and he was a sword swallower. He could swallow a sword. And do you know what he did in front of me? He crashed to the floor before he even got the needle. And he was a sword swallower. Yeah? So I started to wonder, how am I doing? I'm not doing too bad. Yeah?
What was the basic training like?
Very hard. It was really hard, grueling. You was up very early in the morning, and what made it more so, I think, was the venue. The Tower of London was pretty morbid on a foggy, cold morning, and I was in the Wellington Barracks, which is the it's opposite the White Tower on the square, and I had my bed space was right next to the window on the second floor. We were split into four rooms. Of battle honours they were. There was about 40 boys in, I was in Busaco, which is one of our old battle honours in the Peninsula War. It's all Peninsula War, this was. They had Tel Aviv, Busaco, Salamanca, and I think, a funny one like Badajoz. There was four. They were the four houses, and you had to compete against each other, recruit of the year and all that sort of stuff, you know, stick man, they used to call it. And I was in Busaco. It was grueling. We had to be up really early. We had to, by St. Peter's Church on the square, we had to come down this alleyway and all wait there. And the RSM would be on the square and he'd call out on parade. And as you come out of that corner, the wind would hit you and you'd be freezing. And, you know, but they knocked us into shape in no time. I don't know if it would be relevant, but I learnt a word. Because I didn't have an education, I learnt a word on that square one day. We had a corporal, Corporal Westlake, and he was a tiny chap, shouting, hollering, putting fear into everybody, and there was 10 of us in the squad, maybe 20 in the squad, and he said one day, left turn, and everybody's knee has to come up 12 inches and crash down, and obviously mine never came up enough, so I wasn't pulling my weight in a sense. So over he came, he put his nose on my nose, and he said, "Farmer, you're a parasite," meaning, you know, anyway, he said, "Tell them what you are." So I said, "I'm a parasite, Corporal." So he said, "No, tell them what a parasite is." "Well, you know, I've never heard that word, never ever heard that word before." So I said, "I don't know what the word means, Corporal." He said, "Well, I'll tell them." And at the top of his voice on the square at the tower, he said, "A parasite is an evil creature who lives off the backs of others." Right? So I thought to myself, I will never ever forget that word, you know? And I believe that's education, that the rawest, really.
Did you feel aggrieved about it?
No, actually, there was boys that felt aggrieved. There was boys that couldn't take that. But, you know, I had a kind of a sense of humour that even now I can be joked about. I can make a joke that puts myself at the butt of the joke and see the funny side of it, you know? And I used to love it. I used to love their banter. I used to love a friend of mine I went to school with fainted on parade, and his berry came off as he laid there, and the sergeant shouting, "Oh, he's leaving there. He's been out last night on beer," and he hadn't because he wasn't allowed out. And as we marched around, he marched us all round over the boy's berry in his hackle. He used to wear the white hackle. And he said, "Give it a good stamping as you go past on his berry." And then they probably charged him for having a dirty berry. So it sort of toughened you up, really. I think I've got tougher because of it, and never once. I wasn't. What I really liked about the army, I will admit, is that I liked people. I liked boys of my own age that you could have a laugh with, you could play darts in the nappy, tell stories. I could play a guitar and do a bit of country and western. And I was centre of attraction most of my army life, where they get the guitar out and sing the song. And I found I rather enjoyed that part of it. And I never ever thought I would have been up to the hardships, but I was. I never fainted on parade once. I was all fainting on parade because of the cold, and I never fell out. I mean, we had really tough boys there. We had one who came out of prison, a really good friend of mine. He'd been in the Ballstone in prison, and he'd come out, he'd been in prison at 18. He'd come out to do his national service, early release, and he said to me, you know what, that was much easier in prison than this is. And he fell out a few times. If you fell out, you got back squatted, and I could not do that because I made some good friends. So once I really put myself into it, we had to do a 5-mile, I'm really going on a bit now, but at the tower, the basic, you didn't do that. You just learnt rifle drill, march about, look smart. But when that was over, you went down to Purfleet, which was our nearest gunnery place. So you learnt to fire a rifle. But all around the A13, and I see it now, it even looks the same to me, although they've widened it everywhere, but we used to have to do 5 miles, a walk, a march, a trot, and a run for 5 miles. Yeah, every 100, 200 yards you do a march, then you break into a trot, then you do a run. And that was with FSMO, which is Field Service Marching Order, in our days, we call it now. And that weighed, I think it was £78, that weighed, you know what they said? The whole lot of the equipment, the rifle, which was about £10, was this 303 rifle and all the equipment. And I did it. To my surprise, I did it. I never even had a stitch. I did it. And I weighed something like 10 stone. So I was so weak looking, due, I think, to the war days when we never got really good nourishment. And lots of us were the same. I used to have to line up with a dozen young kids. We looked like kids in school. And they shoved this great big wooden spoon of malt in every mouth. They never changed the spoon or washed it. They pick a big jar of malt, and they'd just shove it in every mouth and say, oh, well, that builds you up. Yeah. And then we'd have the inoculations with us, and we'd all rush and push each other out of the way to get the needle first, because it would go blunt. And he'd do about 50, and the last ones, he couldn't get it through the skin. So I think I was quite pleased to think that I was able to do it. And I felt it actually gave me more confidence.
But the prisoner thought it was worse than prison, did he? Harder than prison.
Oh yeah, he said the prison, you had no freedom, but you certainly wasn't doing all this business, running about and lectures and boring lectures. And everybody had these denims in the tower. This was funny, really. What they used to do in the tower, they used to work you really hard in the morning, then you'd have a lunch, and the first thing after lunch was a lecture. Now, you used to sit, now you'd be tired, really. You used to sit facing a big window, and the window used to let the light in, which made the man teaching you a silhouette, yeah, and you sort of drop off, you nod off, because it was a condition of sleepiness, you know, what with the silhouette. And you can smoke, so I was never really a smoker, but everybody had a cigarette, and everybody had burnt holes in their denims there, where you would nod off, and as you would nod off, he would say, Palmer, you do it now, and you think, do what, put the Bren gun back together, you've just seen it done, you know, sorry, I'm not quite up with that, you know. You've been paying attention. You know, it was fun. If you looked at it as fun, you would enjoy yourself. Yeah, you really would. You know, everybody would laugh. And, you know.
But do you think the training prepared you properly for what was to come?
It didn't prepare me personally for war. In no way did it prepare me for war. But it prepared me. National service, if they'd have kept national service for military training, but not to fight, but to march you about, make you harder, give you some values and pride in your regiment, I think that would have been a good thing. But it never ever prepared me for war, because I could fire a rifle, but I couldn't fire a rifle into a person. And that never ever come into it.
Do you think they were trying to knock the civilian out of you?
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we was a soldier first and foremost, we was a soldier. Yeah. I mean, it was good soldiers too. I mean, I was not caught my wife there. I didn't meet her till I came out the army. But I had a girlfriend, and we used to go to these shows. I used to be the only one standing to attention in the palladium when everyone used to get up to go and National Mountain, because he'd come in uniform. He dare not move in case he was some officer somewhere in cities. And then we walked down Whitehall once we was home, and I saluted the senator. Which that was what you had to do in those days. It made you respectful, you know. Even now, I think I'm still, my wife will walk on the inside of the pavement and she'll always go through the door first. It was that type of values it gave you. If we were sitting in what I used to see mainly in the officers' mess, is that they would all, even now, they when your wife or lady goes in, they would all half stand out of their chair. They wouldn't just sit there like with their feet up, they would rise, you know. And that's the sort of values it gave us. And I would do that. If a woman walked in the room, I would stand up, you know. And that's what it did. It taught you sort of morals, really. Yeah.
Was there any part of the training which you couldn't cope with?
Yeah, what I couldn't do, I can't even now, I can't do nothing within a time limit, you see. So, now you imagine a barrack room, you have a fire stove in the middle of the room, used to have all the beds around, there was about 40 people. And they used to say, they need 3 people from each room for the chores. And where the day was finished, they need 3 people to wash up, or go in the cookhouse and prepare help the cook sergeant prepare the food, or go and clean the chapel out. Or that's how I know about the Dukes of Monmouth and all that crowd, because I used to clean their tombs up, because I got caught so many times. So it used to be the last 3 out of the room in certain equipment, they would choose. Well, I couldn't get it on in time. Just could not do it. You had buckles here and buckles there, and because it was a race to do it, I used to sort of go hot and freeze, you know? And then the last 3 out, and I always seem to end up cleaning up something, you know. That was the system they did. They used to get 1,000 people like that to work.
And after you'd done the basic training, can you take me through what happened to you before you actually went to Korea, please?
Yeah, we did the basic training. When we came home on leave, when we went back, the battalion, you joined the battalion, you see. Well, our battalion was stationed in Germany.
Is this the first battalion?
Yes. There was only one then, in my time, because in about 50s, I think, they had one regular battalion, they had a TA battalion. They were stationed at Iserlohn in Germany. Well, I was the last draft from the tower to go to Germany, because they were on their way, they were coming home in March. I'd finished my basic training in the end of January. February, you might be able to confirm if this is right, but I can think it was around about the 6th of February, I was going to join the battalion in Israel, and in those days you went to Liverpool Street Station and you got the 10 minutes past 8 train to Parkston Quay in Harwich for the continent. I was on the station and somebody called out the RTO. If you know the RTO, is the Rail Transport Officers, or was on all the stations. I can see this now, that there was this old big iron bridge on Liverpool Street Station. I was waiting at the foot of the stairs, and the officer called up, come up here, and I went up, and he said, return home immediately, the king died. Would that be about the 6th?
That was the 6th of February 1952.
Well, what a memory, you see. I'll tell you a bit
about the 6th of February.
About the 6th, right, 52. This is 52, because I went in December 51, right. So he said there was no troop movements now. So we went back I went home, reported back to the tower. Had a most interesting historical thing when, always sticks in my mind, they paraded us all on the tower and the proclamation was read for the future monarch. We was all, it seemed like hundreds of us, but it couldn't have been, but there was guardsmen and beefeaters. And this, somebody came out, some sheriff of London or somebody, one of those cock hat things, and he wrote this proclamation about the royal family, and he ended up with, which always makes me smile now, your chance to object to the monarch, you know. You can now take the pace forward and raise your objections. Did you know not a man moved on its wheel? So that was a historical fact, you know, that I got this. Oh, and then I called this a privilege, and it was just where my bed space was, which was right by the window and the door. One of our officers, Captain Waterkind, he came in and he said, I want six chaps, you and you. I've got a job for you. And he took us to see the King Island State. The only thing is, which we rather liked, we had to line up with the public. He wouldn't let us in. Although he was all in uniform, he went as the public and not officially. And just that the regiment had paid its respects. So we had to march past and salute the coffin as we marched past. You know? And that was really a sight to see. It's the only time I've ever seen that. That was a good day out. And he brought us all a meal somewhere in the Charing Cross. Took us back to the town. Captain Waterkind, but nice officer. And that was interesting, yeah. Really interesting that was. After that, we went, after about a week, I think, we got the train sometime in the middle of February, about the 15th, we got the train to Iserlohn. I turned up there, 3 feet of snow, terrible, you know. And then joined the battalion, I was posted into A Company. And then I was a Tuesday rifleman in A Company. Did all my training, forest training, went to Senalaga, which is a big battleground. I believe they knew we was going to Korea, even in those early days, because our training was really extensive, you know. It seemed to be, all we seemed to be doing, we went into a place called the Harz Mountains, Harz, and all we seemed to be doing was digging trenches. And Korea turned out to be like the First World War, just trench warfare. And all we spent our time was digging on hard rocks and living in the snow. And that was in February. In the March, do you want me to keep going?
I'll please.
In the March, we came home to Brentwood, Worley Barracks, Brentwood. And that was to wait for the... we didn't know we was going to Korea. We all thought we was going to have two faces, which I told my father, and, oh, you're so lucky. He was sort of condemning me for it. We were told we were going to garrison a place in Austria, which they was in those days, or better still, we was going to Jamaica. Oh, and we were looking forward to it. And we was in Worley Barracks, Brentwood, and it was... before this happened, we went to a place called Westhoff's Camp in Norfolk, Deptford. And we did forest training. And there was an old village there that seemed to have been deserted, not built especially by the army. And we had to patrol it at night, the streets, and we had to hide in bedrooms and somebody's kitchen, and we had to do warfare. And they would have a cardboard cutout pop out of the door, and we had to shoot at it, all that type of work, you know. I didn't find that good at all, because bayonet work and stuff wasn't in my line at all, you know. I never had the brains, really, to be in the orderly room, but that's what would have suited me fine, you know, to have done something more delicate, I'd say, more artistic. But all this brute force and digging bayonets and things wasn't just me, but I did it. I had to go along with it. That was Westhoff's Camp. We did 3 weeks there, came home, and then we had 3 weeks before that, we came home to Worley Barracks, and I can remember now, it was a nice summer's day, spring day. We came home in May, must have been about May, the end of May. The CO called us all on the parade ground, and he said, I've got some very, very good news for you. Well, here it comes, Jamaica, you know? And he said, we've been chosen, because officers, it always surprised me, you think you've been chosen to fight. They think, if you're chosen to fight, that's great, you know? He said, we've been chosen to go to Korea, the United Nations. Well, who's ever heard of Korea? I've never heard of it. And he said, we knew the war was on out there, because we had a boy that had been there in the Middlesex Regiment, and he'd been demobbed, he's slightly older than us, couldn't face Civvy Street again, couldn't settle down and rejoin our regiment, and could not believe he'd be going back to Korea. Yeah?
How did he feel about it?
Well, he said he didn't mind, but I can tell you what happened later on. He was killed out there. So the thing is, he was the only one. He used to have the Korean ribbons with the oak leaves on to show he'd been twice, you know. Corporal Harry Sevens, he said, Corporal Sevens. But he used to tell us all about Korea, but once we heard he was going, we started looking into it, and we used to hear atrocities that the Americans went through, you know. We heard that they were found hanging from the trees, and their throat's cut and things like that. So it did start to worry us, really. But being young, sort of, never dwelt on it too much. Just, we were just enjoying the army life in Brentwood, you know. We used to come home every evening.
Where did you get news of these atrocities from?
Well, in the newspapers. Once you knew it was going to Korea, the newspapers used to show articles about, you know, what was going on out there. And you took more interest in it because we knew it was going. The battalion was due to sail on the 15th or 18th of August. So that's it. I'd had my embarkation leave, all ready to go, and they called out all certain names and parade lists. Now, you never knew what this was for. But what it was, he said, one of the officers came out and he said, there's a proclamation or some parliament law that will not allow an 18-year-old to go to Korea. You had to be 19 when you landed in Korea. So all people of my age group would have to stay behind and not go with the battalion to get the next boat. Because you would not be 19 by the time you got to Korea. Right? Anyway, so they put me in Canterbury with a group of boys, you know. And that went on until August. I went out on about the 28th August, about less than a month. About 3 weeks. I went out in the Empire. Oh, well.
What was that voyage like?
Oh, it took 6 weeks. Five or six weeks, but I would say 5 weeks, but my friends told me it was six, but I would say five. You couldn't do it under 3.5 or 4. But as a young man, you're making the places we saw. I mean, I can see it now. We left Southampton. We first stop was Portside. We couldn't get off because Colonel Nasser had just taken over through, just been deposed, so it was dangerous. So we couldn't go out and get off. But they stopped there anyway for a day. And then next part after that was Aden, we went through the Red Sea, Aden. And it was Colombo. After Colombo was Singapore. Singapore, Hong Kong. Hong Kong, Busan, Korea. Yeah. That's a nice trip.
Were you doing any training on the ship?
Yeah, training all the time, firing off the end of the ship, not marching about, but parading, cookhouse fatigues, call you up in the morning and tell you what you've got for the day's work, various jobs. Sometimes you didn't have a job, but all lectures, all getting ready for career. And that this surely was wonderful, you know, means for somebody that had never been anywhere. Lovely to see the sights, Hong Kong. Yeah, it was all nice and brown and, you know, healthy. So it was okay.
What impression did Busan make on you?
Well, the impression that put fear into me was when I got there, we was all packed solid on, I can see it now, we was all packed solid on the deck of the ship. The ship was pointing towards a big mountain, and all I could see was heads and equipment. And nobody spoke, it was silent. And I just thought, you know, there's a gloom descended over us all of us. It was as though everybody was thinking what I was thinking, like, what are we in for? Because it was sombre. It was so dark and the mountain there, and I thought, you know, everyone packed with equipment. And it'd be worth noting that the Fusiliers at that time, I don't know the exact figures, but if I say 80%, I wouldn't be far out of National Servicemen. Regular soldiers are few and far between. Like the sergeants, the officers, I even had officers, National Service officers in my platoon. He was Lieutenant Hoskins, he was National Service.